Rod Mayo earlier this week. Some thoughts on, what the Patriots will be doing. It's hour number two, Jones and Arcan. No Mego today. We're taking your phone calls, 617-779-7937. If I sound distracted there, I was just telling Arcan this off the air. So we have, and it's certainly the biggest thing going on in my life, we have my fantasy football auction this weekend. So we have a buddy in town. He's up from New York.
Is it a keeper league, or do you start new every year?
Please. What am I, a noob?
I don't know.
It's a keeper league.
Okay.
Auction. You know, we're adults. So a keeper fantasy football league, obviously the adult thing to do, where you auction and outbid each other and keep guys, and it's highly competitive, okay? Meaning, like, none of us are very good at it, but we're all very competitive with one another, right? And so my buddy just landed from New York, and since he's in town, we were all planning on going out later tonight. We can't settle on a place to go.
Okay.
And it is just outrageous, the amount of texts and the amount of suggestions and the amount of arguing and this doesn't work for me and, oh, I can't go there and I can't do this and I can't do that. And it's just, it's nonstop. It's like every...
How many people are involved in this chain?
Good question. I think six. Let me double check.
Okay. It can be an active chain. I have one that's like three people and I have to mute it all the time. It's just way too active. Way too many notifications.
Hang on. It is, whatever it is, it's embarrassing. Who's in here? One, two, three, four. It is seven.
Seven people. My God.
We can't get seven people to agree on a bar.
Someone just has to say we're going here, and that's it. And if you can't make it,
well,
you can't
make it. This is my thing. It's not a democracy. It's a dictatorship.
Right.
And do I just need to say, guys, I'm not going to meet you there. I'll just be here. Is that what I need to do?
Maybe.
You got to work.
Think
I have that kind of pull?
What sort of places have been kicked around so far?
I mean, think of a bar. It's been mentioned. literally, think of a place that serves alcohol or food in Massachusetts, in the state, not even in Boston.
What have these people done where they say every single place they can't do?
That's a good question. Oh, I don't think they're not allowed in there. When
they're like
86th? No. They're like, oh, this place is too dark. Oh, I don't like the food there. Oh, that place doesn't even serve food. You know, we've probably been kicked out of some of these bars at some point. Like, I wouldn't
rule
that out.
It's like a big picture. It's like, do not serve this guy.
Yeah,
it's a
picture
of Jones on the wall.
Well, I was going to say, when I say we, I definitely mean me. But I'll say we.
You ever been kicked out of a bar?
Yes.
Yeah.
I've been kicked out of a bar, yeah.
Kicked out of a few.
Yeah.
One time.
You've kicked people out.
Have you ever been dragged out of a bar?
No, but I dragged people up the stairs of a bar that was under. I helped drag a guy up the stairs. We threw him up the stairs.
From the Ames Plow.
Rest in peace. Yes.
I know. I've been to that bar. I've told you this a handful of times. I've been to that bar, I don't know, less than five times when it was open, including the little outdoor.
Including the time I threw you up the stairs.
including the time Arcan, Jazzy Jeff style, threw me up the stairs. No, but including the little outdoor seating area that you guys had there. But I do remember the downstairs staircase.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say I remember a ton about what I was doing in that bar, but I do remember that bar. Yeah.
And that's the challenge of having a basement bar, is throwing people out of it. It's kind of a task.
Yeah, once you're in, you're just kind of entrenched.
Right.
So that's what's going on. It's just people can't pick a bar. And that's what we need to do. I think I just need to put my foot down to say we're going here. I'll see you there.
Now, obviously you need a place with like a big table. Do you need like your own
we can stand around. We don't need any space. We're not doing the auction at the bar. We're just
hanging out. This isn't even the draft.
No, the auction.
Right.
The auction's tomorrow night. We're just going out tonight because our buddy's in town. And it's like, the auction's tomorrow. Let's start smack talking each other about the fantasy draft. We're all wives are letting us all go out and do our thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why. We're not doing the draft at like some bar. This is just
to hang out.
No, we're just going somewhere to have a couple of beers together, and it can't be agreed upon. It cannot be agreed upon.
That's fine.
And since I brought it up, we are now at, amount of texts. Since the amount of time. I had it open that whole time. But it's like every time I look at it, it's like 30 texts.
Yeah.
This bar, that bar. What about this one? Too dark. What about that one? No food. Oh, the Childish Gambino's at the Garden tonight. We can't go down there. It's going to be a zoo. I don't think it's going to be a zoo. I think it'll be fine. But I'm biased because I live in that area, so that's easy for me. But so, big mess.
Childish Gambino's at the Garden?
I thought so.
Do
I need to fact check? Are people lying to me in my text chain? Is that what's going on?
No, it just seemed like a big venue for him, but he's there. Yeah, the New World Tour. I didn't know he had new music. I haven't heard from him since This Is America.
I haven't heard from him since he was on Community. That's the last time I heard from him. But anyways, that's hour number two of Jones and Arcan here today. You don't do fantasy football, do you?
Not anymore. I got too into the daily fantasy stuff before gambling was legalized here, so I leaned full on into that. And that's what it is. Plus, all my like college leagues and stuff all kind of disbanded and dissipated, and I didn't really have much to hold on to there. And I didn't feel like doing it with strangers, so I just, you know, I do the daily thing. And now I don't even do that. I just bet on football.
I was going to say, I've really never done the daily fantasy thing, but now that gambling's legal, you don't really need the daily fantasy, right?
No.
It's like, I'm just going to bet daily.
Yeah. And it's fun to do that. Like, because there's some where it's like you just bet like 10 cents or whatever. And if you have the number one roster that day, then you can make like, you know, $10,000 or something, which never happened. But sometimes you make like 10 or 11 and you don't risk anything and you feel pretty smart.
10 cents to make 10K.
You can't brag to your friends because they're not in the league. It's like this big thing with like hundreds of thousands of people all in it. But you feel pretty good about yourself and you have like $50.
Right. It's the equivalent of, you don't know my girlfriend. She doesn't go here.
Exactly.
It's the equivalent of that. But that's not bad, though. You know, deep down, you know.
I want all my bets at a different school. You guys don't know it. Yeah.
You guys don't know. Friends with my cousin. You guys don't know her. Dubs 985 in the Twitch chat, twitch.tv/BostonWEEI. Jones 100% milks the whole draft clock just to take the best player available. I like to think I make my picks in a timely manner. But what do you want? Auction kind of solves for that anyway. Hour number two of Jones and Arcan here on WEEI is brought to you by your Red Sox Ford dealers, or rather your New England Ford dealers, not your Red Sox Ford dealers. Make it the best summer ever by joining Ford and the Bronco family or getting the made-for-you New England Edition F-150, the official truck of the Boston Red Sox. Gerard Mayo, Arcan, and we've talked about this all week. How much say do you think he has in, not the roster, he shouldn't have a lot of say in who's on the roster. He should have input, but Elliot Wolf gets final say on the 53-man roster. And that's fine. I'm okay with that working relationship. I didn't want Elliot Wolf to be the guy in charge of the roster. I don't want Gerard Mayo to be the guy in charge of the players and the game day coach, but whatever, here we are. I think that's fine. Wolf, you rule on the 53. Once you're given the 53, Mayo, you set who's out there, including the starting quarterback. Who do you think actually has some, how much pull, rather, do you think Mayo has when it comes to some of these decisions? Do you think he should have pull?
Yes, I think he should. I mean, in a perfect world, your head coach would have those sort of decision-making abilities. And not just that, but your head coach would want to have those decision-making abilities. And I don't think he wants them. I don't think he wants to pick the quarterback. Like, I don't think that's even something that he wakes up in the morning and agonizes over. You know, like, that seems like, so far anyway, something that he's deferring to all these other people. And I know there's other decisions that you have to make. And I think on defense, he's going to run that defense like, you know, watching those guys like a hawk. Because that's what he knows and that's what he's good at. And that's what he got mostly hired for, I think. He's a defensive-minded coach following another defensive-minded coach. And they want to keep some semblance of that success that they had with a defensive-minded coach. Now, they didn't have it last year, obviously. But, you know, going forward, I think that's sort of the idea. And he'll have all the say in the world in what goes on with that defense. Offensively, though, it doesn't seem like he wants that responsibility. It doesn't seem like, you know, and I'd prefer my head coach want to be in charge of that, want to say, hey, guys, you have to clear this by me first. This isn't just a decision you're all going to make, Ben McAdoo and Alex Van Pelt and all the rest of you guys. Like, you have to run this by me. I know I'm the defensive guy, but I'm the head coach, and this is all something I have to rubber stamp. And it seems like he's very happy to just be like, yeah, you know, it's a big collaborative process, so what?
It's just, it is Red Sox-ish. It's been a while since I've talked about this, but it is Red Sox-ish in that, for a long time, for better or worse, we knew largely how the Patriots were run. It was Bill.
Right.
It was Bill. Bill made the decisions. Now, Brady, in retrospect, was the piece that made it go and the most important piece, and the success was about Brady. But the decision-making came back to Bill. Save for some decisions over the year from the Crafts, or over the years from the Crafts, setting budgets by the Crafts, things like that, ownership-level decisions where ownership should be involved, most of it was Bill. Patriots make a trade, Bill. Patriots make a draft pick, Bill. You know, game day roster decisions, Bill. Now we don't know. And that does feel Red Sox-ish, doesn't it? It's like, who really has say when it comes to the roster? Is it Breslow? Is it ownership? Where's Theo's role in all of this? Alex Cora wants to kick upstairs at some point. And you never really quite know how it's working behind the scenes. You get little reports here, little reports there. But you never really have a good read on it. I feel like that's where we are now with the Patriots, and I'll take a step back and say the Red Sox have largely been dysfunctional. Even when they're winning, the Red Sox feel dysfunctional. Always. For my whole lifetime, for 100 years, the Red Sox largely feel dysfunctional. Even when they win, there's always something there where you feel like it's not quite right. Not everybody's quite on the same page.
Yeah.
Theo's walking out in a gorilla suit. He's pissed at Larry Lucchino, right? You know, they're putting Manny on waivers, and then they come back and win a World Series. Like, there's always something dysfunctional.
Dave Dombrowski wins the World Series.
He's
best
gone.
Team ever, and he's gone the next year.
Thank you.
Like, yeah.
You know, Nomar's traded in the middle of a season because there's always some kind of dysfunction. I'm not saying any of these are right or wrong, just they always feel dysfunctional.
Yep.
That's not where the Patriots are at. And, you know, say what you want about Bill. I think it was pretty dysfunctional at the end with Bill as
definitely
well.
Definitely was, yeah.
But at least we knew who was in charge and who was making decisions. I really don't know, but my best guess is it's Jonathan Kraft. And it feels chaotic because I think he's somewhat chaotic.
Yeah, there's some chaos there for sure. And I think in general, with NFL teams or anything where it's really that performance-based, you know, and your success and everything else, you're going to see that kind of chaos, and you're going to see ownership and you know, groups of owners, individuals, or, you know, sort of like the board. They're out there voting on what's going to happen and what they want to see and what they think's best for their business. I mean, that's the way it works, and that's the way it's been working since all these sports became big businesses. And in this city and in this market, you have some that are very hands-on and some that are just sort of whatever, like, you know, the Jacobs don't really care, just you guys do the hockey and we'll just keep the lights on. But then you have the Crafts, who are very mindful of all of this, and they're very aware of it all. And it may not always be the right thing, and it may look chaotic sometimes, but they are engaged. You know, they are engaged with the team, and they are engaged in everything that's going on. And I think ultimately, and even with John Henry and all that, although he's disengaged, I think, more recently, I would prefer that to, you know, devil may care sort of, you guys just, you do whatever you want, and I'll keep the lights on, and if things keep going poorly, then I'm not going to get involved. I'll just let you guys do what you got to do. And with the Jacobs, and I just keep coming back to them because that's an example of a team that's kind of stuck in the mud, right? That's a team that's bounced in the first or second round every year. It doesn't seem like they ever really get any better, except for, I guess, 2019 when they went to the Cup, but they lost. And in between all of that, it was just a bunch of first and second round exits. So I think that when you have that and you're content with it, fine. But when it comes to something that the ownership's not going to be content with, they have to get involved.
One comment here in the Twitch chat, twitch.tv/BostonWEEI, Edwill111. They're no, I think, more dysfunctional than any other sports franchise in any other city, only Boston. And I don't know, is he talking about the Red Sox or the Patriots? I'm not sure. How many
He's saying there's no dysfunction in other cities, only Boston. Like, he's making fun of us saying only Boston is dysfunctional.
No, and there are other dysfunctional organizations.
I don't think either of us said that, but yeah.
No, but there are other dysfunctional organizations.
Sure.
You're just one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And even on the scale of dysfunction, there's 32 NFL teams. Any other team? Is there another team in the league? You tell me. Is there another team in the league that the coach doesn't pick the quarterback? Is there another team? Maybe there
Cowboys.
Is one. The Cowboys don't pick. Mike McCarthy doesn't
Jerry
choose
picks
who the,
everything.
Mike McCarthy doesn't choose who the starting quarterback is.
Not if Jerry wants somebody else.
I think Jerry kind of likes Trey Lance. Trey Lance doesn't play.
Jerry wants Trey Lance over Dak Prescott.
I think part of the reason Trey Lance is in, and they're not.
I mean, I didn't know that.
They're not paying Dak. So, like, you don't think Mike McCarthy chooses who the starting head coach is?
If McCarthy picked a quarterback and Jerry wanted someone else, you don't think Jerry would overrule him?
No, I don't.
I think he definitely
on a game day decision like that?
Absolutely.
No, I mean, if Dak is playing like garbage for 8 weeks, fine. But
he's about to fire McCarthy this year anyway.
Okay,
he
hasn't paid Dak either, Arcand.
That's true.
So, like he's not married to either one of them. So
I want me some glory hope.
Look, the owner can always tell people what to do. It's their company. But, like, in what organization
do you think every owner would step in like Jerry Jones?
I think most owners step in like Jerry Jones.
No, I think Jerry Jones is a special case.
No,
I think he's more
Jerry
hands-on.
Jones is
Jerry
the GM.
Jones has a radio show out there. Like, he's very involved.
I know. But Robert Kraft and the Jonathan Kraft, I think, are very involved right now. What other organization do you not pick the quarterback where the coach comes out and says, yeah, it's collaborative. Not,
hey, get your damn act together.
Not another organization. Not the Cowboys.
I can't think of one.
Mike McCarthy's never said, yeah, gee, it's up to the offensive coordinator and the GM and ownership and the whole offensive staff. I've never heard that from another coach.
I've not heard that either.
Okay.
I've not heard that specifically. Yeah.
Even on the scale of dysfunction. And if you want to put Dallas on the dysfunctional list, you're 100% right. They are dysfunctional.
Yeah, they haven't won in a while.
I think it's weirder than that. I think it's more strange than that. 617-779-7937. How much trust do you have in Jerod Mayo when he's not even calling the shots? We'll get all the latest here in trending from Joe Braverman. And when we come back, let's get to your confidence level in the whole coaching staff. We never got to this yesterday either with Curran rescheduling in the 4 o'clock hour. We got some coaching ranks that are out on the Patriots and their staff. How are we feeling about Alex Van Pelt running Jerod Mayo's offense? That's right after trending. It's Alex Van Pelt. What's in Drake May's way? Jacoby Brissett. Which I don't love that answer, especially based on what we've seen out of Jacoby Brissett so far this preseason. That's Jones and Arcand here on WEEI. No Mego today. We did our last program with Mego yesterday. This was a scheduled day off for Mego all along. So Arcand and I finish out the week. Then we have some programming changes here at WEEI. If you're unfamiliar with what we're talking about, a lot of places to go seek that out. We talked about it quite a bit the last few days. You can check it out on the Odyssey app. Just for the sake of accuracy, Brissett the last couple of days seemed like he had a pretty good day at practice. Curran said both he and Drake May give him a B-plus yesterday. But he said they were within shells, so how much can you read into it? Today, according to Mark Daniels, it was against the scout team defense and at a slower pace, not necessarily competitive. But stats are the stats. Brissett was 5-for-5 today in 11-on-11. He was 4-for-4 and 7-on-7. May was 9-for-10 and 6-for-7. And the one incompletion in 7-on-7s, he has a note that it was a drop by Kayshon Booty, which I could have sworn Tommy Curran told us yesterday he never drops a pass, but he dropped a pass. And so they both seem like they had good days. They both had strong days yesterday. Largely, Brissett's been underwhelming. And I don't really care what they're doing at training camp. I've seen the two preseason games. Brissett's stunk in both, and I think May looked fine in the first one and really good in the second one. Mm-hmm. Not to overstate how he looked, but I think he looked really comfortable, maybe is the better way to say it. Not really good, really comfortable. And there was potential for some real big plays. If Baker can A, stay in bounds, or B, catch, it'd be a massive day for Drake May.
Yeah.
Never mind just some of the little things that I like. Mobility, ability to throw across his body. Like, who was this saying it last week? Was it you or Mego who was like, I don't want to see him dump down? Was that you?
I have said that, yeah.
Yeah, he's been dumping down, and the plays are much more effective than what we'd see from Mac. You don't think so?
Well, no, I'm dumping down.
He's dumping down on these passes to Jamichael Hasty and some of these other plays.
Right.
And he's able to make a play because the defense has to account for his mobility and his movement. And so when he starts to move in the pocket, the defense has to go after him. They can't just stay at home and say, ah, he's not going to go anywhere. He's a lumbering oaf. He can take off. He can run it in. He's mobile. And so they have to stick with him. They have to account for him. And I think that's freed up a little bit in the short passing game, which you never had free with Mac Jones. Number one, because he had no arm strength, so he didn't have to leave 5 yards away from the line of scrimmage. And number two, he had no real mobility. And so I think those are two things you've already seen out of Drake May and how they can make a difference. It's vanilla defenses. It's second and third team players. I get all that. But Brissett's going against vanilla defenses.
Mm-hmm.
Brissett hasn't gone against a starter yet. Carolina played no starters. Brissett and May were going against the same guys in that Eagles game. So same, level playing field. Brissett's look like garbage. May's look comfortable.
Yeah.
And so I put a lot of stock in that.
I would. I mean, I think that it's if you're looking at that and sort of trying to decide what's it going to look like against the ones, the only real thing we've seen for that is and we didn't see it, but the joint practice. That's the only time that anyone saw that. And both Brissett and May were just getting sacked every play, basically, is what it looked like there. So this may all be moot, you know? I mean, but going against a vanilla defense and going against the second or third stringers or whatever it is, you still have to go out there and not look overwhelmed. And I was expecting Drake May to look overwhelmed. It seemed like he was not progressing all that quickly. It seemed like this was going to be maybe a big reality check for him and for Patriots fans when he went out there against Philly, and it wasn't. I mean, it wasn't any of those things. And it wasn't amazing either. He should have gotten 50 more yards. And I'm actually a little worried about the Javon Baker thing because May looks for him. Like, that's his guy. Like, he's looking for Baker out there, especially when it comes to big plays downfield. And Baker's plummeting on the depth chart right now, according to all the beat writers, because he can't haul the ball in. So, like, that could be problematic for him. If he does that on Sunday and Baker can't catch the ball, then that's going to be, you know, I doubt that's a good way to win the starting job away from Brissett.
Well, again, like, if he's out there with better receivers, like, he's throwing to Javon Baker a lot because that's who he's playing with.
Right.
But if he's out there throwing to Pop Douglas and Polk more, maybe that washes out. But I am curious about Javon Baker tonight, on Sunday, rather. Like, can he catch? Why is he tumbling down the depth chart? How does he look? How much is he playing? I don't think you want him to play a ton in the game, meaning without Brissett or May. If he's on the field with Brissett and May, fine. If he's on the field with Milton or like Zappe, bad sign for him. Doesn't mean he's going to get cut,
right?
But that means he is buried on the depth chart. Bad sign for him. You want to be playing, if you're a skill player on offense or a lineman, with Brissett and May. You don't want to be playing with those other guys. And if you are, bad sign for either your roster security or where you stand in the pecking order.
Yeah, and getting passed by the likes of Kayshon Booty and Tyquan Thornton,
yeah,
the guys who were at the bottom last year and didn't do much, you know, in that time to move up. And Booty obviously had his thing in the offseason. Thornton's been kind of a disappointment, or not kind of one, he's been a big disappointment. But if those guys suddenly are making plays and going out there, and that could be part of it too. Like, Baker's a rookie, and he's a fourth rounder, and there was concerns about his drops in college in his last year. So, I mean, this is the type of thing that happens, especially when that carries over into camp. But I'd like to believe that maybe there's something there. Sometimes it takes a couple years for a guy to bust out. And in the case of someone like Tyquan Thornton, I mean, did anyone expect any? I didn't even think he'd make the team. I thought he'd get cut before Juju Smith-Schuster this year.
Yeah, I mean, look, I still haven't fallen for that trap. I don't disagree with what you just said. I probably would have assumed he'd be off the team before Juju. I agree with that. I'm not falling for Tyquan Thornton. Like, I have no hopes for Tyquan Thornton. The only thing I said about him all offseason is that he's bulked up. But that doesn't mean I think he's a good player or all of a sudden can play or won't get hurt or anything. I don't think he can play. And I've seen it. I know he's fast. I keep reading this from all the beat writers, which, again, I get it. You guys are down there. You need to write about stuff. I really question if they know what they're looking at. But Tyquan Thornton. Speedster. Great. Got it. He was a speedster the day he walked into the NFL. What else? So, I haven't fallen for him. But we'll see. It sounds like he's got a secure roster spot, according to some of these guys. Meanwhile, the coaching staff, and we played Alex Van Pelt there coming back.
Mm-hmm.
It's his offense. What's it going to look like? And how are they going to play is a curious situation for me. And I was reading yesterday on ESPN, they ranked all the coaching staffs in the NFL.
Right.
So the Patriots come in 30th, and I should have sent a note to myself. Who was the worst coaching staff in the league? I'll have to effort and sign into my insider there to access that. But the Patriots are third from the bottom, 30th in the league. And it's accounting for the whole staff. Mayo, Van Pelt, Covington, etc. It says Gerard Mayo has held three jobs in the league. I thought this was a good point. I'd never really thought about it this way. He's held three jobs in the league. Patriots linebacker from 2008 to 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Patriots linebacker coach from 2019 to 2023, and now Patriots coach. Like, the man's had three jobs.
Yep.
Since he walked into the league. That's a good way of putting it. I mean, I know he had always been here, and I know he always worked under Bill and for Robert Kraft and with the Patriots. I got that. I never really thought about it that way. He was a player. He was the linebacker coach, kind of coordinator, and now he's the head coach, and that's it. Of all the new coaches, ESPN writes, he's the biggest question mark. That doesn't mean he'll be the worst or he can't succeed, but I agree with that. You just don't know a lot about what he does and how he'll function because he was under Bill Belichick and he played for Bill Belichick, and we just don't. He's never even called plays, for God's sakes. We say Van Pelt's never called plays. Van Pelt has at least here and there called plays. Mayo's never even called plays. He's never been a coordinator. I'm betting on Mayo, which I find to be a comical line. You just called him the biggest question mark, and now you're betting on him. What concerns me...
Good juice, probably.
Yeah, is his capacity to hire. And this is fair. Mayo has no connections throughout the league.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't seem like anybody wanted to come here and work for the Patriots or work with Mayo as a play caller. No one they wanted high on their list. They eventually backed into Alex Van Pelt. His capacity to hire. Offensive coordinator Alex Van Pelt has been an NFL coach since 2006. The Patriots are the sixth team he has worked for. And this will be his third crack as offensive coordinator. He hasn't called plays in all of those stops, but his third crack as an offensive coordinator. He's as establishment as it gets. This isn't necessarily bad, of course. Van Pelt has a good quarterback-friendly offense, which serves both Jacoby Brissett, who played for Van Pelt in Cleveland, and rookie quarterback Drake May. But it isn't good either. New offensive coordinators such as Ryan Grubb, Brad Idzik, or Clint Kubiak are much more likely than Van Pelt to bring inventive ideas to the table. Now, I don't know if they were going to interview Grubb. I don't know if they were going to interview Idzik. Grubb is in Seattle. Idzik's in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
Where did Kubiak end up getting a job? Was it New Orleans? There was interest in Kubiak here, though. That is one that they were interested in here. And I don't even think he took an interview. Yeah. I don't even think he took a job.
New Orleans Saints, yeah.
So I agree with that. It's just not a very inventive, not a very outside-the-box idea. And some of that is because who knows Gerard Mayo outside of guys who he played with or worked with here in New England. He has no connections throughout the league, and this is a criticism we had when they hired him, and it did come home to roost in this Van Pelt hire.
Jacoby.
Yeah. By the way, the other two teams that are below the Patriots are the Commanders, Dan Quinn, Kingsbury, and Joe Witt Jr. And
real quick, do you agree with that? Patriot staff or Washington staff?
I think I take the Washington staff.
Me too.
Yeah.
And now it's a defensive guy, but like maybe I'm really making this about Van Pelt versus Kingsbury. I'd definitely rather have Kingsbury than Van Pelt. And by the way, I don't think Kingsbury's great. But I
Kingsbury was not good in Arizona.
I'd definitely rather have him than Van Pelt. And just so you don't think I'm contradicting myself, he's part of the Bill coaching tree. He's not. He was drafted by Bill. He played for Bill for like a year. He never coached here.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, there's enough separation there. He wouldn't be my ideal candidate, but it's Van Pelt or it's Kingsbury. I'd rather have Kingsbury.
Yeah, and 32, Las Vegas Raiders, which is Antonio Pierce, Luke Getsy, and Patrick Graham.
Now that's a player's coach.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that coaching staff. Like that's, I mean, Pierce actually was okay last year, but that's another defensive guy. I don't like Luke Getsy. I'm sure Brian running Twitch is screaming down the hall about Luke Getsy. And so, yeah, I don't. That's probably a worse coaching staff, but there's not a lot of options there. So you can jump in on that. Meanwhile, the negotiations I think are interesting. We talked about Judon earlier this week. So never mind who's calling the shots, who's running the team, who's running the offense. What sort of connections do you have throughout the league? How inventive will the offense be? What will it look like? All these questions that we really won't find out until September 8th in the opener. There was a bit of a revelation here from Devon Godchow. We have this, right? This is on his podcast. I didn't realize this guy had a podcast.
I did not either.
But apparently he does. And so...
Well, it makes sense because everyone in the world does.
Fair point.
Yeah.
It's a fair point. And you know what? Maybe I'm well on my way, Arkin. But here's what he had to say on... Let me get the name of his podcast right. The Chaw Talk?
Chaw Talk?
Chaw Talk.
It's God Chow, right? So Chow Talk?
Chow Talk? I'm not sure. But here's his podcast. Here's what he had to say about his negotiations with Elliott Wolf.
Look, man, I don't want to be a distraction. Mayo's a new head coach.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a distraction to the team.
Time out. Sorry. Know, really... That's I should have set this up. That second voice is Jacoby Brissett. Keep going.
Just want to go out here and ball. And training camp came, and I remember having this conversation with Elliott. For mini camp, I was like, look, I ain't doing nothing for training camp. I'm not doing nothing for, you know, because he had called me because the first day at mini camp, I didn't do nothing, but I did my conditioning and I shut it down. And the second day, you know, that morning he called me. He was like, look, like, what's going on? Like, you know, we want you to be out on the field practice. I'm like, look, Elliott, I ain't got a guarantee, you know, and, you know.
Something happened.
And, you know, everybody always said, you know, I get it, this day and age, top pass rushers are getting paid big money, but you also need a guy to come in and stop the run.
Oh, for sure.
I'm like, if the run don't get stopped, then
it's a long day. Yeah, exactly. It's a long day.
I guarantee you, those guys don't want to, you know, so I'm like, let's just try to get somewhere to make it fair. I'm like, you know, I'm not going to do nothing against Philly. Joint practice just happened. I'm not going to do nothing against, you know, in training camp. And the reverse cycle, me and my agent ended up taking a whole nother approach.
Yeah.
When it came to training camp. You know, I was out there. Sure. I practiced and passed the first couple of days. And then about the third day in pass, I got paid, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we were just like a million or two off. I'm like, Elliott, like, let's just get this done. Like, I want to be here.
Exactly.
You guys want me here. Let's just get it done. And then we end up getting it done.
Okay. That to me is wild.
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, so they didn't do that with Judon?
Guess not.
They weren't like, hey, Judon, you're not out there. How do we get this sorted out? How do we solve this? But with Devon effing Godchow, they're like, yeah, how do we get you back out there on the field? And he's like, I'm not doing it without guarantees. And they gave him the guarantees, and they wouldn't with Judon. I think we already knew this. I don't think he really revealed anything that we didn't know. It's just interesting to hear him talk about it. He's like, yeah, guys, I'm not doing that. And then Elliott reached out to me. And assuming he's presenting it accurately and the way it really went down, that's wild to me. Like, the fact that this guy has gotten his first contract out of the Patriots, he's gotten a second contract out of the Patriots, now he's gotten more guarantees out of the Patriots. Bill Belichick called him one of the best defensive linemen in the league or whatever it was a couple of years ago. That's staggering with this guy, that they'll bend over backwards to get him on the field, but they're like, sure, we'll take a middling NFL draft pick for arguably our best player in Matthew Judon. That's wild.
Yeah, it is weird. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that Godchow has an agent, like representation,
Hasn't that come into question? Because I thought
that he does? I don't know if he does I know Judon doesn't.
No, other way. Phil Perry wrote this the other week that Judon is represented by Clutch Sports.
Oh. I thought Judon said he wrote up the contract.
Well,
himself.
So this is why I say it's coming.
What the hell is Clutch Sports doing?
This is why I say it's coming into question. I don't know what that means. Does he use like a contract lawyer or something through Clutch Sports? But he actually negotiates his own. I have no idea. But
I didn't know.
Phil wrote that. Yes,
okay. The best defensive lineman in the league.
There it is.
It's interesting to be sure. I don't know. Was this? I wonder if the timeline in Barmore's blood clot thing, if that had something to do with this. Maybe if they looked at Godchow and said, okay, we can't screw around with this guy anymore.
Why? But, what does one have to do with the other?
Well, because it's the same position. You know, you're talking about an interior lineman.
But do they play the same way?
No, but, you know, it's like if you lose that guy, Godchow is not as good as Barmore. I think Barmore's better than Godchow, but they're similar. They're similar kind of players. They're, I'd say, close in terms of, like, what tier of defensive lineman in the league that they are. And I don't know that you have a lot of other guys on the team that are of that level. You know, it's just not after that. You know, I'm not even really sure what names you're talking about. So maybe it had something to do with that. Maybe it was just as simple as we're not doing this with Judon no matter what.
Okay.
You know, no matter what, we're just not re-signing him. That's final.
Is that what Monty's getting at here? Judon was acting like a bitch, and so that's why he didn't get his deal. You think Godshaw was acting much better?
Oh, for sure.
I mean, the reason...
Was he going out there and lighting up the coat? I mean, like...
Okay, initially, they were both doing the exact same thing.
Initially, yes.
And then they played ball with Godshaw, mm-hmm. and that's when Judon lost it. When Godshaw's agents, the Rosenhaus brothers, showed up at training camp, that's when Judon lost it. He's like, you're paying this bum, you're paying this scrub, and you're not going to talk to me. So that's when he lost it. Initially, they were doing the exact same thing. They weren't going out there. They weren't showing up for padded practices. They were handling it the exact same way.
You're sticking with that motherfucker.
Judon, that's exactly what he said. Judon didn't start flying off the handle, and he didn't handle it well. I agree with this. But they handled it exactly the same way until they decided to pay Godshaw.
But
what did Godshaw do to get paid?
Timeline-wise, the way I remember it is that the Rosenhaus or whatever, they came over, and they talked to him, and then Godshaw came back and practiced. And he was there in pads and everything after that. But they hadn't come to the deal
yet. Rosenhaus, why do you think they showed up? Because he was about to get paid.
Right, but they hadn't agreed to it yet. And so he came back, they wore the pads, and he was out there practicing.
Yeah,
and
I don't think that's how it went. Maybe that's how it went down. I don't know. But if you're asking me what I think... I think Rosenhaus showed up. They made progress on a deal. Godshaw started practicing again because they made progress towards a deal. And Judon flew off the handle because he's like, why are you prioritizing this guy, the Brady line, over me? I mean, I that's how I saw it. So, look, I don't think Judon handled himself well. I don't mean to defend it.
Mm-hmm.
But until Godshaw was getting paid and his agents showed up, they were acting the exact same way. So I don't get why they'd prioritize one over the other. I've never gotten that. But it's another weird, odd thing going on with the Patriots this offseason. 617-779-7937. More of your thoughts coming up. We also got insight into Jerod Mayo and his coaching philosophy. I found this comment interesting. We'll get to it next. I'll be honest, I found that to be an interesting philosophy from Jerod Mayo. First of all, did he call them NEP? Is that what he said?
That's what I heard. Can we hear that one more time?
Yeah, I forgot. I listened to that this morning, and I'm like, he couldn't have just said that. But that's
get
what
down
I thought
with
I heard.
NEP, yeah, you know me.
Then I heard it again just now, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot. I thought it's definitely what he said. NEP, all about ourselves. Who refers to them that way?
I've never heard anyone refer to him that
way. As we just read last segment, he's been here since 2008. Mm-hmm. On and off.
Focused on NEP.
It's like when Kyrie called the Garden the TD.
That is exactly what it's like.
It's like, yeah, it's going to be a great night at the TD. It's like, what?
The TD.
No one's ever said that.
No one has ever called it that, not once. Who calls the NEP?
Everyone at the Sox is like, yeah, we're going to the FP.
NEP.
It's a beautiful night here at FP.
I think I saw Greg discussing this morning. I guess Jaylen Brown and his new rap song, which, by the way, I watched the video for. There was a little shot at Nike in the video, Arkin.
I didn't see the video, but I did hear another snippet of it, and I liked the second snippet I heard better than the one we played yesterday.
Well, it was probably the part where it wasn't him and it was ASAP Ferg.
That could be.
It was probably
No, it was him.
You're sure it was him? Because
yeah.
I heard most of his part. It wasn't good. But there was a little shot at Nike in the beginning. He's like watching his TV in his, is it his Fort Point place? Probably not anymore. But he's watching television, and he's scrolling through the channels, and they're talking about how the whole world is talking about Jaylen Brown being snubbed from the Olympics, which felt a bit strong. I mean, it was a big story in sports. I don't know if the whole world was talking about it. But anyway, my roundabout point is I heard Greg talking about this morning, where I guess he referred to Boston as Beantown.
Oh.
But that one happens, but you're just like, it doesn't happen by people who are from here and live here.
And he's not from here, so it's okay.
Well, right.
Yeah.
But I've at least heard that before. I don't like it.
Never heard NEP before.
Gives me douche chills when I hear a Beantown. But NEP, so we do what is best for NEP. Okay, I can get past that.
That's like in a tweet when you're running out of characters and you can't write Patriots, so you just write NEP, or, you know, like maybe that.
I don't even think like in the standings on, I don't know, like ESPN. The standings, NE. Thank you. Exactly. Yeah. So, like, I don't even think they do any. I don't even know where NEP came from. But whatever, it's what he does. It's a new thing he's trying to catch on, as you said, like Kyrie Irving and the TD. Maybe. But the other piece, it's not about postmortem. It's about premortem, which I just find to be, is that a word? Is premortem a word? I'm guessing not. I've not heard it before, but
premortem.
I'll allow for it. It's about the premortem. Which sounds gross the more I say it. But it's about the pre-mortem. It's about getting in front of, like, I get what he's saying, but I don't know how I feel about that philosophy. I get it. We're not going to wait to correct what we think is wrong. We're going to get in front of it pre-mortem. I still feel like it was an odd way to go about it. That's what we're emphasizing.
Okay, so it's like a corporate thing. It's like a corporate term.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It says it's a managerial strategy. It has a Wikipedia entry. A managerial strategy. You probably learned this over at Optum. At Optum, right.
Exactly.
A managerial strategy in which a project team imagines that a project or organization has failed and works backward to determine what potentially could lead to the failure of the project or organization.
Got it. So it's a stupid business phrase that he's now bringing into
outside
the football
outside the box, you guys.
Okay, well, that isn't that what it sounds like? Guys,
prepare
it's not,
for anything.
Yeah, it's not about the postmortem. It's about the premortem. You know what I mean? You're only as strong as the poster that I used to see all the time? You're only as strong as the weakest
link.
The girls around you, your best friends, like girls would tweet this out all the time or blast this out on AOL Instant Messenger. You're only as strong as the girls you're friends with and the tables you stand on and all this stuff. It's like dumb corporate logo speak that Gerard Mayo has. And so that's what that is, pre-mortem.
I like how they're imagining that the project's going to fail. Like, you don't have to really think too hard about what that's going to look like. It just failed last year. I know.
Look,
it wasn't.
We know everything's going to fall apart, but be ready for it.
Yeah, and this is what could potentially lead to the failure. So if that's what they're doing, like, okay, what's one thing that could potentially lead to the failure? Ruining Drake May,
yep.
Right? Like, that would be a big failure.
That would be a big one.
If Drake May goes out there and the offensive line is getting crushed by the defense and he's getting sacked all the time and throwing picks and he gets completely, just down on himself and everything and they have to go back to Brissett, like, that would be a potential failure of the project.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sort of would be the big domino to topple everything else. But, you know, if that's the managerial strategy you're looking at, doesn't it all center around him? Doesn't it all center around Drake May and how you bring him along and how you coach him up and what he does?
Yeah. I just, you know, pre-mortem. How about, I'll take some post-mortem too. Like, let's look at what we did wrong and let's try to fix it. No. We're gonna get in front of it. But that's silly corporate speak. By the way, the one I was looking at, apparently it's a big one in sororities, but I do remember this. This would be on like people's AOL Instant, their away message,
mm-hmm,
on Instant Messenger on AIM. You familiar with AIM, Joe Braverman?
I know I'm old enough to know about instant messaging. Yes.
Okay, good. Wow, that's impressive. 26 years old.
The kid right next to me, though, not a clue.
Oh, of course he doesn't know.
I watched a documentary. Jacob doesn't know. I watched a documentary about the before times.
My Nana told me about AIM the other day.
But here it is. I remember this as an away message, you know, where I would put out, you know, like Bob Marley lyrics. You're only as strong as the cocktails you drink, the tables you dance on, and the friends you keep. There you go. That's what I was thinking of. That's Gerard Mayo and his pre-mortem versus post-mortem. That's what it is. Only as strong as the cocktails you drink, the tables you stand on, and the friends you keep.
Mm.
So you're saying he drunkenly stood on a table and said that to the entire locker room.
Bingo. A couple of texts here, 37937. Number one. NEP is New England Patriots. Yeah, no, we got it.
Whoa.
We got that.
I didn't realize. New England Patriots. The NEP.
See. Now I get it.
Thank you, Texas. Thank
sense.
You very
You're
much.
You're right. We have been since 1960 or whatever the organization.
NEP.
NEP.
England Patriot. It was right in front of us the whole time.
I can't believe we missed
Unbelievable.
It, quite frankly. There's also this one, and now I've lost where it went. Oh, Jones, you're not from Boston. You're from Vermont. Fair point. I still don't call it Beantown, but fair point. Not from here. 617-779-7937. Our good buddy JP is in North Providence.
Hey,
what's up, JP?
Hey, JP.
Jones, I just heard the news last night. I wanted to call in and wish you, Arkin, the best of luck in your endeavors. Now you know how Senator Palpatine felt when that plan went. But I got a question, Jones.
Yes.
I do have a question.
Okay.
So starting Monday, will you and Keith be playing Reunited, Welcome Back Carter theme, or Deja Vu as the theme song for the show? Just want
to
know.
Well, we're going to meet this weekend, so I'm going to have to go over some of those ideas, but we'll suggest them, JP, and thank you for the kind words. But yeah, we're going to have to come to grips on some of these things. Yeah, Kiefer Madness.
Report started with you and Keith, right? That was Keith's thing, wasn't it?
Yeah,
In the very beginning?
My recollection. So it's funny, the Dong Report over the years, Arkin, not to go down memory lane too much.
I know, I made it great.
My recollection.
But Keith started it.
My recollection was that was a Rich Keefe idea.
Mm-hmm.
We were all into fantasy baseball, and we're like, hey, remember how SportsCenter, Keith presented it this way, remember how SportsCenter used to do like back in 1992, Joe, they'd show all the home runs from the night before, but it would just be like a screen of like you know, Jose Canseco, Joe Carter, you know, and you'd like see the screen and like the little cartoon baseball would like scream and go flying out of the screen. And he's like, wouldn't it be funny if we just kind of did that and like made fun of it? And so that's how it started. I'll tell you, Cattles made a real nice improvement to that. Cattles is the one who came up with the numbers.
Numbers,
thing.
Right, yeah.
That was a Cattles move.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know. What was your legacy on the Dog Report there, Arcan?
Holding the note really long.
That's what I was thinking of, too.
That was the main thing, I think. We actually
almost killed ourselves doing it.
Yes.
I very much almost.
I needed to be resuscitated at one point, I think, one of those nights. But, there was that. There was a lot of things that, like, listeners contributed, so I don't want to take credit for that, but that happened while I was there, so I take a little bit of credit for
it. I think it just slowly improved steadily over the years, but yeah, that was a key
idea. It was ripped away from us.
Bring back the Dong Report. It's famously Mike Felger's least favorite segment in the history of radio.
Mm-hmm.
617-779-7937. More of your feedback here coming up. Let's get back to starting a rookie quarterback, the benefits of it. That's next.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.